Everyone, Kevin Woodside here with another episode of A Place in Time, the official North Canton Heritage Society podcast. This episode was recorded live. It was actually our first kind of live recording. It features Mayor Wilder, who was invited to come speak at the Heritage Society back in February. This episode was actually done as a celebration of the 100th anniversary of the North Canton Police Department. So enjoy.
So good evening and welcome. My name is Kelly Odegaard. I am the new director here at the North Canton Heritage Society, and we thank you for coming out in this less than stellar weather tonight. We appreciate you joining us this evening. For those of you who may not be familiar with the Heritage Society, we were created in 1972, and our mission has been to preserve, protect, and share the history of North Canton. Some of the ways that we've done that is promoting historical research, preserving historical records and memorabilia, promoting interest in local and national history, and helping protect historical sites in our area, such as the Guard Shack out by City Hall. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so we are reliant on donations, grants, and membership to raise our funds every year. Your membership assists in continuing to support and preserve our over 4,000 artifacts. We have about 3,000 historic photographs here and about 1,000 historic artifacts, all in these back two rooms. You've allowed us to continue to preserve all these historical artifacts, create exhibits, and develop continuing education on the history of North Canton. So for that, we thank you. For those of you who may be new, we are always happy to welcome new members and volunteers. We have a little display up front here that has some of the things from Smitty and some police memorabilia. On top, there's some information about membership, volunteers, and also upcoming events that we have for the next couple months. So afterwards, feel free to grab a cookie, browse, check things out, and we'll be happy to answer any questions. Pretty much all the people standing around in the back are board members, and they'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. So moving on, it is my honor tonight to introduce our speaker, Mayor Stephen Wilder. He began his esteemed law enforcement career in North Canton in 1981 as an unpaid auxiliary officer. In 1983, he was hired as a part-time in law enforcement. In 1986, he became a full-time patrolman. He was promoted to lieutenant in 1996 and chief of police in 2011. His esteemed background includes a Bachelor of Arts degree in Criminal Justice Studies from Kent State University and a Master's in Criminal Justice Administration from Tiffin University. Along with additional education, he has also been the recipient of several awards, and we're just blessed to have him here tonight. So after retiring from the North Canton Police Department in 2017, he continued to be involved in the community in many civic and professional organizations, including the North Canton YMCA, Chamber of Commerce, Junior Achievement, Rotary Club, Knights of Columbus, Stark County Police Chiefs Association, and Boy Scouts Buckeye Council. In addition to participating in these organizations, he recently took the oath of office December 1st and became our newest mayor. His vision and goal for his beloved city has always remained constant: to make North Canton a better place to live, work, and grow. So please help me in welcoming Mayor Wilder.
That's the most elegant introduction I've ever had. Thank you very much. And so for me, I'm going to silence my cell phone, okay, so I don't interrupt myself. But I got one more here that the city gave me, so so there you go. But hey, listen, I can't believe this. This is a standing room only, so I like the smallness of the room. It really makes it feel very warm. Take your jackets off. It's a little warm in here. Now, if you have to get up and leave, I understand that. Refreshments are always right there. But what a joy and pleasure to be here tonight. So again, good evening, everyone. Thanks again for the invite. And yes, I'm a new member of the Heritage Society, so I hope you got my membership. Okay, all right. I wanted to make sure I did something extra special this year, especially as the new mayor. But again, good evening, everyone, and thank you again for the invitation to present tonight. I have a test question for you. Gregory, maybe you can answer this. I don't know. I'll leave it up. What's the longest word in the English language? What do you think? Was it?
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
That's one I've heard. All right. Anything else? Smiles. Exactly. Smiles. Because, you know, it has an S at the beginning and then it has an S at the end. But it's, there's a mile in between all that. So there you go. That's for my third graders, okay, when I was teaching there. The other one is, what eight-letter word has all the letters of the alphabet in it? What eight-letter word has all the letters in the alphabet in it?
Alphabet.
Thank you very much. My third grader has 16. So there you go. Anyways, tidbit of useless information. You know, I have good news and bad news. The good news is I was given 10 minutes to speak tonight. The bad news is I was given 10 minutes to speak tonight, but I have 20 minutes to share some thoughts with you about the law enforcement. And it's not so much a history of North Canton, but it's perspective from maybe when I came into law enforcement and where we are today. So do any of you have family members in law enforcement? Okay. Do any of you know someone in law enforcement? All right. Have any of you been involved with law enforcement? Me too. And there's some sheepish grins out there, and all of a sudden, you know, the hand goes to the eyes. Well, listen, you know, I look at it this way. Law enforcement, to me, is a very noble profession. And I believe it's worthy of the highest respect, the respect that was once universally given. Unfortunately, over the years, activists in our society have worked to degrade the respect we are due. Recent events indicate that they are having some success, as we see a percentage of the public viewing officers with suspicion and disdain. I fear there are too many incidents, and it has escalated oftentimes into physical hostility. Some of those we've seen on the TV or on our internet and social media. Now please understand that law enforcement officers are not above the law. However, there have been incidents where law enforcement officers' performance or authority has been under scrutiny. We are public servants, folks. We're not public enemies. We live and work and raise families in these communities and have vested interest in keeping them safe. Our jobs are increasingly dangerous. There's been reports in the media about ambush attacks on law enforcement that have grown over the last 8 years. And a recent study by the FBI concluded that in many cases were motivated by a desire just to hurt or kill a police officer. So let's go back in time for just a little bit. And I was born in 1950, and maybe some of you are very close to that age, as so you can tell how old I am today. But like many families, we watched television. You know, back then, and into the 50s and the 60s, in the 70s, on into the 80s and 90s, and all the way up into 2000, here we are in 2010. You know, we watched a variety of shows on channels what? Three, five, and eight. Okay, exactly. All right. And through the 80s, you know, 90s and 2000, 2010, till now, the media has exploded in so many forms of social entertainment, communication, and information. So think back with me. There was news, we had weather, sports, we have that today. Okay, did we watch Westerns? Of course, Ponderosa, okay. Varieties, special shows, specials, cartoons, and soap operas. I'm not a big fan of soap operas, but when you think back, that was a lot on TV. So when you think back, and of course, there's the other thing I left out, cop shows, police shows. So I'm gonna go down a list, reminisce with me here just for a little bit. If it gets too long, just raise your hand and I'll cut it off. So let's go back to 1960 and work our way up. Ben Gazzara, Burke's Law, Gene Barry. Honey West was Ann Francis. The Felony Squad, Hawk with Burt Reynolds. NYPD, Jack Warden. Ironside, and who was in Ironside?
Perry Mason.
Perry Mason, exactly. Can't forget him. Dragnet with Harry Morgan. Mannix with Mike Connors. The Mod Squad, Michael Cole. Clarence Williams III and Peggy Lipton. One Adam 12, okay? Martin Milner, Kurt McCord. Couldn't forget that. I'll throw in T.J. Hooker also. And by the way, we never did throw the side-handle baton, okay, to catch criminals, just so you know that. The Outsider was Darren Gavin. The Baldwins, Leslie Nielsen, Howie Rowe. Who can forget Starsky and Hutch? The Rookies, SWAT. Charlie's Angels. How can you forget them? And, of course, Cagney and Lacey, Barnaby Jones, Remington Steele, Kojak, Hill Street Blues, Law and Order, Walker, Texas Ranger, NCIS, Criminal Minds, Monk, and Northwoods Law, even to today. And here's my favorites. I watch a lot of PBS, and I like Miss Marple. I like Vera. I like Midsummer Murders. I like Inspector Morse, and most of all, I like Endeavor. I will stop there. Quite a list of entertainment on cop shows. And today we call and watch, even today, Cops and Live PD. See, on Live PD, it's about 4 or 5 hours that covers probably 7 or 8 law enforcement agencies throughout the United States and Canada, all at the same time. So you can go from one community to another with law enforcement, and you're seeing it live right in front of you. Now, my nephew, Greg Wilder, is a sergeant with the Tallahassee Police Department. His wife is a lieutenant. They have 26-year-old boys, and that's quite a handle there. But I recently saw Gregory on an episode of Live PD, and he was involved in a car chase. It was a carjacking, and the suspect ran the car through a backyard, hit a fence, and here comes my nephew, and that's all on TV, and he gets out of his car, and I watched him run. And the suspect got away. He jumped the fence, but my nephew didn't. Smart move on the police officer's part. So after that episode, I called him up and said, "Greg, I didn't know you could run that fast with all that equipment, being 6'3 and 240 pounds. So he goes, "Well, Uncle Steve, it was a lot to do. And I said, "Okay, Greg, all right, not a problem." So what those early TV shows really didn't capture, though, I joked about that, but it's really the depth of what law enforcement officers encounter on a daily basis during their shifts. You know, when you think back then, crimes were solved in what?
30 minutes.
30 minutes or 1 hour. Evidence was collected and processed in 1 hour. The suspect was identified, questioned, and arrested in 1 hour. A jury was selected in minutes. A trial was commenced, the witnesses called, testimony taken, verdict and sentencing all completed in 1 hour. And there's always that cliffhanger episode that's going to keep us coming in that next week. So maybe we were anything but a superhero. But then again, when you think at the end of the day, maybe we were, because that was the day we rescued some ducklings from a sewer or recovered a stolen bike for a child, or perform CPR on someone and actually save the life after we were doing all those other things that day. Let me step back in time for just a little bit, and I'm going to reminisce about myself, if you'll bear with me. It was 1979. I was hired as a police officer for the town of Brunswick, Maine. Why I went to Maine was when I got out of college in 73, cop jobs, as I say, were at a premium. And I got the theory in college, but you know, you didn't get any really practical experience. And back then, police jobs were at a premium. So a lot of it was who you know, or whether you had a father or a mother or somebody else in law enforcement. So even though I tested around here, my brother was a sergeant up in Brunswick, Maine, and I had visited him when I was 18. And I tell you what, when you're in a Plymouth with a four-barrel engine, and we're out there on the interstate, and and you're going about 120 miles down the interstate, I'm going, "This is cool." Okay. No lights and siren, but, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, no one's on the road. I kind of like this, you know, that would be cool. But anyways, I went up to Maine, and I had pre-tested, did my physical background all in a half a day. And back then, in Maine, we had a Maine Municipal Association, so it was a 10 or 12 communities would belong to this. Outside the larger cities like Portland or Augusta or Bangor, they have their own testing. But this was a neat system. So I tested, and all I did was put down my preference of where I wanted to live or work. Bath, Maine, Freeport, Brunswick, wherever, Wiscasset. Anyways, after a failed relationship, women, you know, they always, you know, get us going. A girlfriend married a dentist, and I said, well, that was it. And I moved to Maine and became a police officer. And so I was up there for 3 weeks. And I was working on tearing down a a roof. I had some building and construction skills before I moved back up there, or before I moved. And I'd already tested for, and interviewed with the town council and the review team for police officers. They were going to hire 4 officers. And I think they were just waiting for me to move up there, make the commitment, which I did. And so I was up here for 3 weeks on a May day. The sun's really beating down on us. We're tearing the roof off the old Elk building. And Lieutenant Dion, Spike Dion, came over, drove up in the police car. He was my brother's best friend, Lieutenant Dion. And Lieutenant Dion stood about this high, built like this. And he was the kind of officer that you did not want to give any lip to. And so I'm up there on the roof, and he goes, "Hey, Wilder." I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "You still want to be a cop?" I said, "Yes, sir, I do." "Well, get your ass down here. We're going to swell you in." So I don't have quite the down east accent, okay? I know how to say ca, and I could say four. But so anyway, I got down. I dropped my belt, got in the cruiser. He drove me to the town hall. There's my brother. Here's the clerk of courts. Here's a Bible. Here's Spike. I said, "So what happens now?" He says, "We're going to swear you in." Left hand on the Bible, swore me in. That was it. My brother shook my hand. Spike shook my hand. The clerk turned around and said, "Congratulations, Steve." I said, "So what happens now?" He says, "I'm going to take you back to work, finish up your day, come in on Wednesday, and we'll get you fixed up." So that's what happened. I came in Wednesday. They took me down to the uniform area. They fitted me up with some uniforms, gave me a couple of pairs of boots, gave me this parka. And that parka went down to here, and it had a big old zipper thing, and it was about this thick. I said, "What am I going to need that for?" He says, "You'll find out." Because we did walk the beat back then. So anyways, to make a longer story short, I got hired, and in 3 days, they put me in the office. So I studied the city code, state ordinances for Maine, learned a little about the operations, learned about the police department, got to meet some of the other officers, and I got qualified in those 3 days with my with a shotgun. Outside of shooting a BB gun at Boy Scouts, shotgun was new to me. My brother took me down to the trading post. I bought a 38 Special Model 10 stainless steel handgun. And so that was my equipment consisted of that 38 Special. I was given 1 pair of handcuffs, a portable radio, a nightstick, hickory, blonde, by the way, my Everlast aluminum chrome 3D flashlight. Batteries not included. I had to buy those. I was given my pen. I had my little notebook. I had a citation holder, my map of the town, and the city and code books. I spent 1 week on afternoons with Corporal John Murphy. I spent 1 week on days with Corporal Murphy, and 1 week on nights. Back then, we worked 10-hour shifts. 3 days off, 4 days on. And so after those 3 weeks, I got cut loose. My academy training was set for the day that I got hired. It was going to take me about a year to get into the Maine State Police Academy. So what training did I have? You just heard it, folks. Cut loose, 29 years old, as a new police officer for the town of Brunswick. But look about today's officers. Today's officers are equipped with a 9mm or a fortified caliber handgun, 14 rounds in a magazine. They may be carrying 2 or 4 magazines now with them. They get carrying 2 handcuffs, a double handcuff case, tear gas canister, an expandable baton, a handheld radio, microphone on the uniform, maybe an earpiece, a taser, a flashlight, small, high intensity, a voice activated recorder, a body camera, a tactical knife, a hidden backup pistol, surgical gloves, a ballistic vest, inner or outer. In the trunk of that vehicle is probably a few other things. Could have been a tactical rifle, a less than lethal shotgun, report forms, comfort animals, a duty bag that may have raincoat, gloves, any other accessories that the officer might need, camera equipment, tactical first aid kits or trauma kits now, not only for the officer, but in case for a citizen. And we're all expected to know and how to use those things in all instances. Now, folks, I wasn't taught on how to drive in an emergency response. type of operation. I knew how to drive, pretty good driver, but I didn't get that kind of training at that time like they do now. I knew first aid from my Boy Scout training. It really paid off. And I knew about artificial respiration. But it wasn't until later on that we actually were trained in CPR. And who ever knew about what an AED was way back then? An automated external defibrillator. And now we're all certified and trained to do those, use those things. Folks, I had a pencil and a pad. Today's officers are equipped with modern mobile data terminals, computers in their cars. They could check on a car license, a driver's license, or a person that they may encounter in seconds. When I was a police officer on the road, we had microfilm. And on that film, it was a sheet. And on that sheet had the letters of the car and then the numbers. And on Saturdays, we had to sit dispatch because our dispatchers only worked Monday through Friday. So as officer, you had to sit dispatch. Now imagine you're taking a call, an emergency, and you have an officer stopped on the road wanting information on somebody. Imagine how long that would have taken. Because what I'd have to do is I have to find that sheet, take it out, put it under the overhead projector, and then with a stylus, kind of come down and find that, and then, okay, this comes back to Stephen B. Wilder, you know, 123 Summer Street, you know, Brunswick, Maine. Now, the officers don't even have to call it in. They can type it in on their computers. And that's how technology has really helped us in getting better information on people or vehicles or stolen guns, anything like that. Back then, folks, search and seizure laws were very rudimentary for me. All right? I knew about the Fourth Amendment, but I didn't have the training or the skills or the knowledge that officers are receiving now when they're going to the police academy. I knew a little bit about stop and frisk, okay? But I did know about Miranda. Miranda, for our civil rights, our rights that we read to officer or to people, that was established in 1966. I still have my original Miranda warning from the north or from the town of Brunswick. I knew a little bit about, you know, how to deal with adults, but there's also juvenile laws in there too, that we have a better separation now in understanding how we should deal with juveniles. So law enforcement officers of today are schooled dramatically to know and understand that these laws and to perform their duties fairly and impartially, and to know how to preserve a crime scene, going in and understanding what blood spatter evidence could be, taking photographs, fingerprints. Now we have to secure court orders just to go into someone's cell phone in order to get data that may be pertinent to a case or an investigation. Folks, I didn't know anything about DNA back then. I didn't know how important picking up a cigarette butt would be to link somebody to a crime. How about this one? Not too long ago, we had an incident where we recovered a contact lens that one of our officers saw, was smart enough to pick that up, bag it. We sent it to the crime lab. We came back with DNA on the inside of that contact lens and or on the outside. And we were able to connect that to a suspect, to a crime. And just because of that one incident, we were able to convict three people who committed a crime way back in my first year as police chief. So that, you know, that technology didn't exist back in 1979. I diverted here. So just keep in mind that law enforcement changes hourly. It really does. Just like medicine, technology, farming, could be anything. So what knowledge did we have about illegal drugs back in the 1980s? I knew a little bit about marijuana. I knew about cocaine. I knew something about heroin, LSD. But look at where we're at today and how much do we know about opiates and how it's affecting our communities, our families, and our lives. I didn't know anything about what an AR-15 was. I didn't know anything about what bump stocks are. I never really worried about being, about sniper training, or really even thinking about ambushing of law enforcement officers. But now, these things are all current that we have to face today. More than any other profession, I believe law enforcement requires more re-education on a daily basis. And I should say, we do this more than any other profession on re-educating ourselves. prior to my leaving as chief. And I turned this over to our former chief and now even Chief Kemp, who's in our audience today, how important the training tasks are on a daily basis. Our officers are going through things on a daily basis to understand. And simple examples, but that training is going on every day. So think about this. As a police officer, we're called upon to be a pharmacologist, a psychologist, a teacher, a counselor, an EMT, sometimes a lawyer, crisis negotiator. How about a field training officer? How about a pallbearer? Enforcing the law just to protect and serve. Providing a listening ear to a fellow employee or to a citizen that we encounter. Hopefully, we do our jobs admirably and we can end our shift and safely go home. It's always been a tough job. It was a tough way to make a living. My starting salary in 1979 was $9,500 a year. Maybe I was making as much as a school teacher back then. But you know, why? You know, why do we do this job? And I remember a history lesson I got one time as a young man. And I thought the teacher was very good. And this is why I think I have a special spot for educators in my heart. Because we were talking about the Constitution. And that history teacher said, think about the people who were going for our Bill of Rights, who were involved in our Constitution and forming our country. They were all protesters. They were protesting oppression in one way, shape, or form. And when we take that oath of office, whether you're in the military or in law enforcement, it's because of the Constitution that when we take that oath of office, we take an oath to protect all persons. Whether that's Miranda versus Arizona, or whether that was the state of Ohio versus Terry. The point is, we take an oath to protect all persons. So, police officers, we represent the government. They used to say that the postal carrier was the first line of government. Anymore for me, I think it's us on the line, on the blue line. So imagine doing our job when people are fighting or resisting you, talking trash to you, spitting on you, hitting you, kicking you, biting you, lying to you, or just plain driving by and giving you the finger, or just trying to kill you. Then think about what their job description is. Putting their lives on the line for you, dealing with the mentally ill, mediating a domestic dispute, counseling a victim of child molestation, and along with them, their family members. Have you ever delivered a death notification? Or counseling the bereaved after you've given that death notification? Pulling people out of a burning car or a house? Or chasing someone down a darkened path who might be psychopathic, has a gun with no conscience? I've been there. Or talking someone down from taking their own life or some other person. So what kind of person does this job? What kind of person takes this kind of job? And what kind of person does all these things? I think it's a person who does this, it's because they're doing it out of their belief and calling. It's for a society of strangers that we may never meet. Because we're always there, we're always committed, and we're always ready. It's not a job, folks. For me, it's a calling. And I think it's a calling for many people who go into law enforcement. Maybe you'll never know what it takes for a person to do this. So all I ask of you is just give thanks that they're here for us. I just want to thank you for the privilege, for your time and attention, and I'll entertain any questions or comments that you might have. So thank you.
This has been a production of the North Canton Heritage Society. The views, opinions, and comments made by the hosts, co-hosts, or guests are their own, and do not necessarily reflect those of the North Canton Heritage Society. The North Canton Heritage Society is a non-profit historical organization located in North Canton, Ohio, and is dedicated to preserving the history and heritage of North Canton through education, research, and general good times. We are a member-driven organization, and as such, we depend on your membership to keep going. You can go to our website, www.northcantonheritage.org, to learn more about becoming a member. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Music was provided by the royalty-free websites Free Music Archive and Free Sound. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you around town.